Yes, a very good morning all. Thursday, April 4, the Big Sports Breakfast on Sky Sports Radio and Radio Tab. A very good morning to you wherever and however you are listening. And we've got footy tonight. We've got football on at the moment over in the Premier League. Arsenal up against Luton Town. Brentford up against Brighton. Manchester City in action in about 40 minutes' time as well. They're up against Aston Villa. So plenty on this morning. We had an A-League game last night, City FC and Perth Glory over in the West. That finished 1-1 as well. But Gather Round starts in the AFL tonight. Adelaide up against Melbourne. And, the Crows will be under pressure there at home in front of their faithful, considering they've had an 0-3 start to the season. South Australia in party mode ahead of this weekend with all the games to be played there. And, of course, the NRL tonight at Amy Park. Melbourne up against Brisbane. And, as far as Cameron Munster is concerned, considering this injury and sort of the vagueness around its seriousness, I don't know if I'll be convinced he's playing until you see his name on the team sheet now before kickoff. Morning to you, Lozza. How are you?
Yeah, morning, Mido. Yeah, Cameron Munster, yeah, a groin injury. You need to be really concerned about that. Now, I don't know whether it was old vision I saw on the news last night, but they showed him kicking a ball.
I didn't see that.
Goal kicking. So, mucking around. So, if that's the case, then obviously he's...
At training.
At training. Oh, well, so, obviously he's ready to go. But if it's not, it might be old vision. I'm unsure. But they did show him kicking a ball. But Cameron Munster is very important to Melbourne. I think while they've handled his loss okay, they're a better team with him in it. You know, their last performance against Newcastle, they only went down by 2 points. Jonah Pezzett's a really good player, but he's no Cameron Munster at this stage of his career. We get a good indication to see how the Broncos are going as well tonight. Looking forward to seeing Ben Takura play, the tallest man to ever play rugby league, apparently. Only 19 years of age, but he's a big thing. So Melbourne will sort of go after him when he gets on the field at some stage. But I thought they were really impressive against the Cowboys in those conditions the other night. Adam Reynolds' kicking game was first class. But to go down to Melbourne with a weakened pack and have your star fullback out, it's going to be difficult. Although Tristan Saylor himself is a ideal replacement for a Zach Lomax. For a Reece Walsh, but... Yep, just looking forward to the round to start tonight. There's some good football over the weekend. And, hopefully the rain stays away for what's going to be a great race day on Saturday.
Ah, it's going to be an absolute bumper. All those fields are out. Day one of the championships at Royal Randwick. And, yes, we're very much on rain watch today and tomorrow. Now, today, I'm not seeing it too bad now today. I'm looking at the... Bureau of Meteorology and Randwick.
Tomorrow's
and today, the rainfall now forecast today is up to around at worst 12 mils, but tomorrow 25 to 100 mils, 4 inches of rain at worst forecast for tomorrow. Saturday 6 to 50 mils. So they're the 2 days, particularly tomorrow.
Well, it started to be pushed back a little bit because on the Saturday, it wasn't expected that much. Mm. They were expecting it to sort of clear up by the Saturday and all the rain was coming today and tomorrow. So I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, you know.
We'll see how it all plays out. Not much we can do about it, but regardless, those fields are mouth-watering stuff heading towards Saturday. But based on what we're going to see tomorrow... And I'll get a track report through soon, but it was a good track yesterday. So I think you can start, we're pretty confident you can do your heavy track form, provided the Bureau hasn't given us an absolute furphy. Mm. We'll see how that all plays out. And you said, Loz, as we came in this morning, that you flicked over to Stan and saw a bit of the boxing last night. It was called The Gathering. It was marketed as the moniker given to the evening, broadcast on Stan as mainly a whole heap of ex-AFL players put on the gloves and had a crack at each other.
Yeah, well, I got home from doing NRL 360 and I thought, I'll look around the grounds on the television, something to watch. And I came across on Stan the fight night. So I switched it on and there was a couple of fights on there, the two AFL fights that I saw. The first one was Dane Swan taking on Dale Thomas. And Dale Thomas was absolutely gassed at the end. He copped a hiding. Dane Swan was just way too good. So that was okay. And then I watched Kane Corns and Nathan Brown because I think everyone wanted to see Kane Corns. I don't know Kane at all, but he's very opinionated.
To say the least.
And I think he rubs people up the wrong way. But I like some of the comments he makes. And he copped a walloping as well. And Nathan Brown, while he wasn't as fit as Kane Corns, and they did it for charity, so well done to them. I think this would work in Brisbane, up there for Magic Round, if they were able to put something like this together on the night before the first game. I think you'd have people turn up. I think you'd get at least 3,000 or 4,000 people to a fight night with ex-rugby league players, for
because
sure.
Because we see mainly current players do that one at the end of the season, don't we, when they put on a fight night. I think you're right, Loz.
No, most definitely it'd work in Brisbane.
Yeah.
Take their idea.
Yeah.
Why I know not? We don't well, like talk, taking AFL ideas, but...
If it makes money and gets interest, who cares?
Most definitely. I think it'll work. I dead set think it'll work because, you know, in a smaller venue like that, you only need 3,000 people, 2,000 or 3,000 people, and you're doing it for charity and everyone feels good about themselves. No one gets too hurt. Only their egos get bruised. And it looked like it was a good night.
I reckon you and Blocker could be co-promoters.
No, not with the new snozz that I got done 2 years ago. We don't want
to co-promote. So you could, yeah, I could. You promote. And Blocker could put the fights together.
Yeah, I wouldn't be participating in it.
No. I wouldn't let you, to be honest.
No, I don't want to show people my skill in the boxing ring. You know, I thought it was something to watch anyway, Mido, during the week. So I think if you put it on a Wednesday or a Thursday night, when do they play the first game? Magic Round? Is it Friday night now?
No, it's Thursday.
They still have the Thursday night.
Yeah. I'm sure they do.
They did something differently, though, didn't they, after year one? What was that?
Oh, you're right, I can't remember. One of our
because there was a big blow-up about it, wasn't there? They played two
maybe
games.
It was on the Friday.
I don't know. Whatever they did, and they changed it. I think something like that would work.
Well, Magic Round this year, there's no Thursday night game. You are
there's
right,
no
Lox.
Thursday night game. Yes.
So Magic Round's round 11, which starts Friday, May 17. And you've got a double header on the Friday. Mm. Raiders, Dogs, Manly, Brisbane.
Well, we'll be up there for that game because we'll be having a reunion of celebrating the
30 years since 94.
Since 94.
And you beat the Dogs, of course, in that grand final. Yeah.
Got a couple of reunions this year. You laughing at Johnny? Oh, dear.
Jeez, you're all up in Brisbane for it.
Yeah, I remember we won the 94 grand final. And that obviously was the third grand final. And someone said to Steve Wallace, are you going to get the other tattoo? And he said, yeah. He said, I'm going to get the premiers put on my arm. He said, after 94, I'll have to have the old PTO written, please turn over. I've won that many.
Sensational. Well, look forward to that. So, yeah, it's two games Friday night. You've got three on the Saturday, the standard triple header, and there's three games on the Sunday now as well. The Dragons have the bye in Magic Round this year. So that's how it'll all play out in round 11, starting with the 1994 Raiders Premiership reunion.
Yeah, well.
Taking over.
Imagine all us up in Brisbane for 94. Jeez.
Are you up for the whole weekend?
I will be up there. Well, we'll be up there broadcasting.
I think we're going up
broadcasting from up there. So I'll just stay. I think one night may be enough for me.
Mm.
So I'll obviously catch up on the Thursday with the early birds, the ones that get up there early, or the locals, the guys that are living there, which is a few of them. And then, obviously, Friday, we'll start somewhere and finish somewhere.
Oh, gee, what a conundrum for the old Raiders faithful deciding which reunions they've got to sort out this year. So, Loz is mentioning they've got the 30 year for the 94, and you got the 35 year for the 89.
Yeah. Big year in place, Mitter.
And you played, obviously, the Tigers in round 2. I mean, that's too early. You can't go off early. You've got to save it for, you know,
no, exactly
rockstar right. time of the season, probably later in the year.
Actually, yeah. Do you celebrate? Yeah, you can celebrate every year. Yeah, you can. Yeah, I was just going to say, because 1990 is like What's that?
Well, 34.
34. Years. Geez, 34. Can you do a 34 as well?
Well, you can do whatever you want.
35? Or you just do it every decade?
When it gets beyond 30, you may as well do it every year.
Yeah, well, you're starting to get old then, aren't you?
No, you lost. I'm never going to attribute the word old to you, ever.
No, well, I'm. You know, my goal is, and I know you'll never stay looking young, but I want to, inside with mind and heart, stay young as I possibly can.
I can confidently say you do that very well.
Mm. I want to be that bloke at 80. People go, Is he ever grown up? Is that bloke ever grown up?
Well, you're doing it fantastically. would you do that pretty well?
Oh, I'm a different beast at home.
Yeah,
if there's just me and Michelle around. But once I get outside those four walls,
look out.
All
right. The back pages of the papers today, and on the back page of the Telegraph, there's a story about the Roosters. Roosters' five-year stitch. There's a picture of them celebrating their 2019 premiership, and just about, or basically, all their injuries and suspension issues in that time. Let's face it, a lot of clubs go through it, but the Roosters in particular have. Trent Robertson's barely been able to pick a full-strength side in that period. So, just a little story about that. Tigers, back page of the paper as well, down to business, Tigers blueprint from outhouse to powerhouse. So the club unveiled a strategic plan yesterday, and they've placed emphasis on the Southwest Corridor, which they've sort of admitted that, you know, they have neglected a bit, that Campbelltown-MacArthur region, and leveraging that potential nursery. And they've said that no ceiling were the words used in the plan to describe their NRL ambitions. Though boss Shane Richardson says that, you know, everything's benchmarked towards them becoming a top four club. Particularly interested in the stadium and the home base situation there. It's still pretty vague because they're liaising with the relevant councils and also the NRL and Venues New South Wales. But they want to sort of figure out a three-year plan in regards to how they play their home games, basically, going forward, which has been an eternal issue for this club.
Well, I can't believe they've neglected that area, to be perfectly fair, Mido, because it's the fastest growing area in New South Wales, I think. And to have that sitting at your doorstep and not taking advantage of that, I think is madness.
They're going
to
put an office there.
Well, they need to do more than office there. Yeah. They'd need to be working with schools, they need to be working on the ground. And one of the big advantages you can get with a footy team, as big as the West Tigers should be, is your development. Because you can have a pathway system that could save you a lot of money. Because they should be a bit like Penrith, where they're just stacking players up. And when one moves on, they've got a production line there, someone ready to go into that team and be that next man to have success. There's recruitment clubs because they haven't got big junior leagues or they don't invest in their pathways. But you would think a club like the Tigers, it's there for them because they've got so many kids. And if they get them to play rugby league, you will develop superstars in your system that are just there that want to play for the club. And they've got an attachment right from the start with that club. And if you're talent ID is good. You'll spot those kids and you'll have them trained up, ready to go when someone moves on. I can't believe they've never haven't invested in it.
It is incredible, isn't it? When you think of that region, other clubs would kill for a nursery like that and access to talent like that.
Most definitely.
Because, that is young families, kids who love the game. Right,
win their hearts and minds early, be out there going around to schools. Turning up on weekends, wherever they need to be, at rugby league, getting the emblem in everyone's mind, talking about the club, talking about the game. I know they probably don't want to be based out there, but they need to spend a bit more time out there.
Definitely. So they're looking to address that. Back page of the Courier Mail today, Saving Sailor, Red Hill Resurrection, how Kev threw son of a gun a Broncos lifeline. Story here about Tristan Saylor Nice story. Obviously went through a lot off the field with that court case. And, well, he's the man filling in at the moment for Reece Walsh. And Wendell Saylor just paying some tribute here to Kevin Walter, saying that basically, without, you know, showing faith in his son Tristan, he would have been taking off overseas. And certainly produced well last week, didn't he, against the Cowboys?
I think he's a really good player, Middo. I think he's a first grader. I didn't really know a lot about Tristan. I saw him play and was hoping that he was going to be a good player and get some chances in first grade. But the last couple of times he's played there, he's handled himself with aplomb, and he's just such a wonderful talent that he should be playing first grade. So, yes, he's biding his time up there in Brisbane, but I reckon there'll be a chance for a club to come knocking at some stage, because if he keeps repeating his performances that he does when Reece Walsh is out of the team, well, who knows, he may well force himself into the 17 somewhere on the bench, or he gets another opportunity at another club.
Back page of the Australian today, and Clifford Land's plan to save the Rebels. So the Melbourne Rebels could be saved after all. So Clifford, being the ex-chair of Qantas, former chief executive of Rio Tinto, Lee Clifford, part of a consortium, private equity backed, that could be set to move the Melbourne Rebels to the western suburbs of Melbourne, which is one of the fastest growing areas in Australia at the moment, and to partner with A-League club Western United. And in the outer suburbs of Melbourne's west, there's a 15,000 seat stadium being built. So the Melbourne Rebels, who, well, we pretty much thought were going to be finishing at the end of this season in Super Rugby Pacific, may in the end be saved, is this article here on the back page of the Australian. I do just wonder, though, overall, is this the best result for Australian rugby? Because when you look at the moment, obviously crowds, etc., are dwindling. So that means more cost to prop these franchises up. And is having five professional teams the best thing for Australian rugby? At the moment, it is no. Because it is leaking money.
I don't know.
But if it's a private equity,
they're putting their own money in rather than Rugby Australia.
Consortium, yeah, exactly. So it depends how it all looks, I guess, the financials. Yeah. But it looks like they could be saved.
Well, one thing they've got to be careful of, Middo, I'd assume, is to go further into debt, Rugby Australia, because they're going to get a windfall with the British and Irish Lions.
Tickets sold out, by the way,
yeah,
for all those tests next year and nearly all the tour games.
And the World Cup. So you're going to make a lot of money out of those two events. But if you've got plenty of debt, that's where the money's going to go. It's not going to be reinvested back into the game, because they're going to have to get rid of their debt. But I hope it works out. But you'd be pretty game, wouldn't you, investing your money into a rugby union team in Melbourne?
Yeah, it's...
Unless you had plenty.
Well, yeah, they've obviously got this strategic plan, but partnering with Western United and, you know, putting a lot of effort and resources into winning the hearts and minds of the Pacifica community, and particularly in Melbourne, they think that they can make headway there. So we'll see how that all unfolds. Dick Fain's coming up, obviously wasn't on yesterday as he was catching a flight. So he's going to join us after the news to talk all things American sport. But just as we go to the news, dreadful yesterday that the news came through. 23-year-old jockey Stefano Cerchi has sadly died from injuries that he suffered in a race fall in Canberra a couple of weeks ago. Now, in that period, his parents and his girlfriend, Brittany Fallon, is the daughter of former champion jockey in the UK, Kieran Fallon, great jockey. And Brittany and Churchy's parents flew in from overseas. They've been by his bedside keeping vigil for the last couple of weeks. Stefano arrived here in Australia from the UK just at the start of the year to do some work for Annabelle Neesham, work for her stable. Just so, so tragic. 23 years of age, and we offer our condolences to everyone associated, particularly Stefano's parents and his girlfriend, Brittany, all his friends, family, and we know how hard this hits all the jockeys in particular as well. Premier League this morning, Arsenal 1-0 up against Luton Town. In the other match, it is scoreless. Brentford up against Brighton. both matches around the 39-minute mark and kicking off in about 5 minutes' time is Manchester City at home against Aston Villa. And the market with Tab has City $1.22, Villa $11, the draw paying $6.50. If you believe that Villa can eke something out of this, and they've of course got Tottenham breathing down their necks in a race for the top four, although Tottenham missed an opportunity yesterday with that draw with West Ham, so Ange Postecoglou's side 2 points behind Aston Villa as it stands. Last night in the A-League, 1-1, Sydney FC and Perth Glory in the West at HBF Park. Joe Lolley opened the scoring from the penalty spot. Then the Sky Blues were down to 10 men. Teenager Jake Girdwood-Reich was sent off. And a equaliser came for the Glory in the second half there. So 1-1 there in the A-League men's last night, Sydney FC and Perth Glory. Just in the Indian Premier League last night. Now, man, Pup over there. Sorry, commentating, wearing a, I think it was a puffer vest in the commentary. Isn't it hot over there in India? Not sure what the deal is there, but we'll check in with him probably next week. We might try and get him on tomorrow. It depends on what his phone reception's doing over there and the Wi-Fi and all that jazz. But the Kolkata Knight Riders, 7 for 272, beat the Delhi Capitals 166. The Capitals were bowled out for, so the Knight Riders winning by 106 runs. But there's been some Aussies take part in this match. Gee, I'll tell you what, 272 in 20 overs. So Sunil Nareen, 85 off 39 balls, opening the batting. He was eventually dismissed by Mitch Marsh, who took 1 for 37 from 3 overs. But for the Delhi Capitals, he got Dave Warner at the top of the order, bowled by Mitchell Starc for 18. Mitch Marsh out for a duck, dismissed by Mitchell Starc as well. So Starc, 3 overs, 2 for 25. Of course, what was his contract? 3.18 million or something.
A lot of money. I'll tell you who else will be worth a lot of money. This young Indian fast bowler.
Yes.
Mate, he regularly bowls at 150. Did you see the ball that got Cameron Green?
Yeah, I did.
That was just too fast for him.
Yeah.
Too fast for him. So I hope he's, and I'm sure he will. And again, it's T20. But geez, I hope he comes to Australia.
I reckon he will, Loz. I reckon they'll look at that. So this is Mayank Yadav. Indian quick, 21 years of age. He's been unleashed in this IPL. He got up to 156.7 kilometres an hour, but he's regularly bowling 150. And plays for Lucknow. And as Loz mentioned, he bowled Cameron Green. He also dismissed Glenn Maxwell. That was in the game yesterday. But I saw those highlights yesterday somewhere.
One with Green, he just missed it.
Yeah.
Just too good.
Beat him for pace.
Yep, beat him for pace. There was a little bit of movement, but he was behind the eight ball straight away.
So Mayank Yadav could be a real threat out here in Australian conditions, you would expect.
He'd nearly get it. Well, got to find 4K, but on Australian pitches.
Breeze behind him.
He could get 160.
Yeah. So we'll keep an eye on him. We'll get a full report from Pup at some point. How are you, Dick?
Oh, I'm beautiful, man. I'm staring out at the Pacific Ocean in Maui. It doesn't get any better than this.
Oh. You're on holidays.
I'm on holidays. That's right.
Ooh, how long for?
Just got here. So, this is the first morning. So, I'm here for a week.
Surf's up.
Oh, it's beautiful, man. I got to go find some surf. It's, kind of calm out in front of us. But I'll go find some waves for my son and I to kill each other in.
Gosh, well, you sound chilled. The final four, March Madness moves into April and into the final four. And we've got two pronounced favourites. UConn, of course, the team to beat. They're 11.5, in fact, 12.5-point favourites against Alabama. And Purdue, a 9.5-point favourites against North Carolina State. These matches for our listeners, Sunday morning, our time. But can you envisage one upset in those two games?
Only the Purdue side. That's the only one I can see. I think UConn has just been playing too perfect a basketball for two seasons now. I think they're beatable by Purdue if they were to get Purdue in the championship game. But UConn, they're just, what they're doing is they're defying what NCAA tournament teams do. Usually when you have an NCAA tournament team that wins the championship, they don't even make it to the Sweet 16 the next year. This is the first time in like 15 years it's even happened where a team has won the championship and made it to the Sweet 16. It is so hard to repeat, but they are just playing so consistently well on both sides of the ball. Klingon is just a force down there blocking everything that anybody tries to throw up. I mean, Alabama, to stay in it, is going to have to hit their threes. And Alabama is an excellent three-point shooting team, but I think if UConn just extends their defense and forces Alabama to penetrate, it's going to be tough for Bama to keep up with UConn. Mm-hmm.
I saw a bit of this women's game the other day. Dick, Iowa taking on LSU, and I've heard you talk about Caitlin Clark before. Didn't know much about her. So when I'm watching her, it rang a bell. And then she just kept going, bang, 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 landing in the basket. How good is she?
She's the greatest college women's basketball player of all time. Wow. She has transformed the game. You just take a look at the ratings. 12.3 million viewers for that basketball game. A women's basketball game that wasn't even a Final Four game. An Elite Eight game, 12.3 million viewers. Just to put that in perspective, guys. That's the second best NCAA tournament ratings this year on the men's side or the women's side. It beat four of five NBA finals games last year for ratings. Gosh. And it's the most watched basketball game of any kind on ESPN since the 2018 Eastern Conference Finals. That is how many people watch that women's game. And it's only going to rise now with this next game coming up against UConn.
What was the rivalry there between her and I can't remember the lady's name on the other team.
Yeah, Angel Reese.
Angel Reese. What's the beef there?
Well, it goes back to last year's national championship game. This was a rematch of the national championship game of last year that LSU won. And Angel Reese is a very, very outspoken player. I mean, Caitlin Clark is outspoken on the court. Angel Reese is kind of outspoken both on the court and off the court. And, you know, Angel Reese kind of flashed a little John Cena, you can't see me, at the end of the game. She was pointing at her ring finger like, hey, Caitlin, look at this. I got myself a ring and you don't. And she was doing that on the floor. And so that carried over to this year. But they were good sports at the end of the game. They embraced at the end of the game. So there were no hard feelings after Iowa got its revenge and heads to the Final Four.
But she basically has to score 35 points every game, otherwise they don't win, do they? Because I see South Carolina are the hot favourites to win it all in the heading into the Final Four. They're $1.45.
Yeah, all the rest of these teams that are in it are more complete basketball teams than Iowa. It's just that Caitlin Clark is so much better than any player on any other team. She just rises her level. And it's funny, like, you can scout all you want and say, hey, if we hold Caitlin Clark to under 35 points, I guarantee you we can win this game. Well, that's all great in theory. And you actually have to go out and hold Caitlin Clark to under 35 points, and almost no team has been able to do that this season.
Mm. Is it right? My son said to me the other day that a lot of the girls, they don't want to leave college early because they earn a lot more money than what they would if they went professional. Is that right?
Yeah, we've seen a big shift because in the last couple of years, there's something called name, image, and likeness where these college players, there was a lawsuit filed in the Supreme Court that these college athletes make so much money for their programs that they should be able to use their name, image, and likeness to make money. Prior to that, they were strictly amateur athletes. And now this Supreme Court ruling has allowed these players to get paid. And especially on the women's side of things, but even on the men's side of things, these top-ranked players for these teams are making anywhere from $500,000 to even upwards to $1 million in a season. And that's just, frankly, more than the WNBA pays. And if you're not a lottery pick in the NBA, you might as well just stay at Kentucky or Kansas or one of these top-ranked teams, and continue to make your $500,000 to $1 million, play on your college team, be a superstar, be on TV every week, instead of being a second-round draft pick in the NBA and playing in some minor league or heading overseas and playing. So it's actually helped the college game a lot because it's kept these players in school, so we know them more. We know Caitlin Clark more than we have in the past. We know guys like Armando Bacot and Hunter Dickinson on the men's side more so than we have in the past, because normally these guys would just leave as fast as they possibly could because we're like, well, we're not making any money. We might as well go to the NBA, even if we're going to be a low first-round draft pick and not make a lot of money. We might as well do that than stay here and make nothing in college.
And just back on the men's side, Zach Edey, he's sort of the man, isn't he, at Purdue as far as the best player. Where's he sort of expected to go in the NBA draft, and how is he expected to translate into the NBA as well?
He would translate fabulously if this were 1984. and you had these post players that were 7 feet tall that you just dumped it into them and they made a post move and a jump hook or something like that, because he is fantastically skilled. He's not good just because he's big. He is fantastically skilled. He is a mountain of a man. He's 7'4", 300 pounds, absolutely dominated. Makes Purdue win is the fact that they can shoot around him. So you can't double Zach Edey in the post because they got four shooters standing around there at the three-point line that if he passes to any one of them that you leave, they're going to knock the three down. And that's what makes Purdue so much better than they were last year, because they just couldn't shoot the ball last year, and this they can. How well does he translate? He's a low first-round draft pick. He's kind of a guy that you'd have to use in spurts. He's a good defender, not an elite defensive player. He's just a straight-up 1980s post-up center with really great moves that's fantastic for the college game when you have shooters around you, not so fantastic for the NBA game.
What about in the NBA then, Dick? In the East, it just looks like Celtics. Although you're still a little bit concerned about them, aren't you?
Well, I'm not concerned about them in the East. They have really stretch their lead. They're 12 games ahead of the Bucks. I still think the Bucks can give them a good Eastern Conference championship. That's the Eastern Conference championship we all want to see. I don't see any other team in the Eastern Conference. I mean, if Philadelphia, you know, shows over the last few games with Joel Embiid back, and then, you know, wins a couple series in the playoffs, then you might think, okay, Philadelphia is back to where we thought they were going to be. So it'll be interesting to see how well Joel Embiid plays over the next 2 or 3 weeks, because that's the only other team I could potentially see other than Milwaukee giving Boston a game. And then the Western Conference, you know, we are headed towards a Los Angeles Lakers Golden State Warriors play-in series, guys. And that's going to be fabulous. And wow. I am sticking with the LA Lakers. I think the Lakers are dangerous. I think they can probably turn the gas off here in the next couple of games. They win a couple more games and clinch that play-in spot and really don't look like they can move up. I think they can turn off the gas. They can rest LeBron. They can rest AD. And I think the Lakers' best chance to beat the Denver Nuggets is if they get that 8 seed and they play Denver in the first round, because then they're not battle weary over 2-3 series in the playoffs. They are fresh and ready to go. I think that's the only shot they have of beating Denver is if they see them in the first round.
Gosh, yeah, that play-in, as it stands at the moment, Sacramento 7, Phoenix 8, Lakers 9, Warriors 10. That is mouthwatering how that's going.
It really is. It's so much more interesting. I mean, it's so much more interesting. Look at the Eastern Conference, guys. It's Miami, Philadelphia, and then two teams that are sub-500 in the Bulls and the Hawks playing. I mean, the Eastern Conference play-in is going to – no one's going to watch that. Everybody's going to watch Lakers-Warriors.
Okay, Texas Open. Before the Masters, who do you like this week?
Yeah. Well, the top end guys that I like are Hideki, Connors, and Norin. Those are the three. Connors has won this twice. He had better golf coming into this than either time that he won it before. I think Hideki has had a fabulous year. And then Alex Norin is a guy that one of the more talented players that has never won on the big-time PGA Tour. I think he's won a off-season event. But, no, I tell you what, it's going to be fun this week in Texas. We'll see how much the winds blow, and then it sets up for a fabulous Masters coming up next week. And we get to see all the guys, not only the PGA guys. We get to see the LIV boys as well.
Enjoy Hawaii. Fair to say we're envious.
I swear I just saw a humpback whale breach about 500 meters out to my right. So, yes, it's good stuff.
Enjoy, mate. Thank you.
See you, boys.
This year, Sunday and Monday, it's the Inglis Easter Yearling Sale, and one like no other, because Winx's filly by Piero goes through the ring on Monday. For more, we're joined by the chief executive of Inglis Bloodstock, Sebastian Hutch. Sebastian, a very good morning to you, mate. How are you?
Morning, gents. Hope you're both well.
We are, and appreciate your time as always, and the anticipation for this sale. Sort of tell us about the difference in this Easter sale, considering the presence of Winx's filly, first filly to go through.
Yeah, I mean, it's got a lot of attention. She was as good a race mare, as good a racehorse as ever been in Australia, one of the best world has ever seen. So to have her only offspring going through the sale, certainly only offspring to date, is pretty extraordinary. And to sort of enhance the whole thing, she's a really beautiful filly, a lot like her mum, a lot of personality characteristics of her mum, according to those people who are closest to her. So I think it's just a pleasure for us to be part of it, really.
I was just going to ask you then, Seb, like you're saying plenty of interest. Like, where's the interest coming from? Is it overseas as well as here in Australia? And what?
Yeah, there's lots of local interest. Yep. Like, there's an expectation, obviously, that she'll be expensive. But, like, ultimately, the owner's very pragmatic about it. They'll agree on a reserve likely Monday morning and put her into the ring. But they're keen to sell, I think, or they're keen to get the horse exposed to the market. So there'll be local people who participate. I think, excitingly for a horse like this, it's just been a massive amount of international interest, whether it's people from the US, Europe, the Middle East, the Far East, Japan. You know, just we've promoted it heavily, obviously, but she hasn't needed much in the way of promoting. We started a field inquiry about the yearling from as soon as we announced it was going to be in the sale, and that's only enhanced since we released the catalogue and even further in the last few weeks.
It's interesting, Sebastian, you say she's got, or a lot of people say she's got a lot of similar characteristics to her mother. The interesting thing about Winx, she was never sort of viewed as a remarkable specimen to look at, unlike, say, a Black Caviar. And I know, you know, you can say Black Caviar was a sprinter, but you looked at her and, you know, you could see the muscles and just how striking she was. Yet Winx, the amount of times you looked at her and you thought, what is remarkable about this mare? And so much of it was just, I think, her heart and that speed. But, you know, what is it about this filly that you look at and you do notice?
I think in a human context, if you compared it to looking at the starting blocks of the 100-meter sprint at the Olympics as opposed to the start of the 800 meters,
yeah,
you know, to the average person, you know, a 100-meter sprinter, which is effectively what Black Caviar was, just is all impressive, all muscle, all power, and that's the requirement of that discipline. Whereas Winx, being a high-class filly at, you know, anywhere from 1,400 meters to 2,000 meters, and I don't know if she'd have stayed further, she might have won races at good race at 6 furlongs if she'd been trained that way, but just probably a more versatile athlete than a Black Caviar, for example. And consequently, the physical attributes are just a bit different. You think the variety of different tracks she got around, variety of different circumstances she encountered, just incredibly athletic. And I think one of the big things with Winx, I mean, obviously you talk about the mental side of it and heart and everything, but just physically she was tremendously athletic and obviously very, very sound. You know, I don't think there was ever the only race I can ever remember Winx missing of any real significance was the day Bowman was suspended and she trialed instead of, I can't remember the race that she ran, that she missed because Hugh was suspended. But that's the only race I ever really remember missing. You know, every prep, there's never a situation where, oh, well, Winx is going to miss this race because she's not 100% or she's not right. So just tremendously sound. And her daughter has very much similar attributes in terms of her physique, you know, tremendous athleticism in her walk. She looks like she's going to get better and stronger as she gets older. Very similar looking, similar head, similar color, etc. So these are all things. I mean, it's absolutely a complete unknown as to what her racing ability is going to be. But at this stage, all the early indicators are very positive.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And obviously, there's a lot of interest. Is it fair to say that this will be the biggest sale yet, given that you've got the Winx foal and no doubt a lot of other great horses ready to be sold on the day?
I don't think so. I mean, like, this is has been a pretty extraordinary sale for decades. Like, it's the most high profile. It's one of the most high profile yearling sales in the world, and the most high profile yearling sale in Australia. And there, some of the results out of this have been incredible, particularly in the last few years. I mean, I don't think there's any expectation on our part that we'll be setting any records for the sale, but there are lots of good horses in the sale, and there are lots of people here. The weather isn't going to do us any favours by the looks of things, but certainly up until this point, it's been really great, and looking forward to another good day today. I mean, really, what we want is people to come away from here with the champions of the future, which happens year after year, and hopefully the same can happen this year.
What are some emerging stallions to watch, or some stallions you expect to really, I guess, take a step up in this sale?
We got a bunch of horses with their, or a bunch of stallions with their first yearlings that are really interesting, like Farnan, Ole Kirk, and Bivouac, for example. But the horse that's obviously made a giant move in the last 6 months is Justify. Yeah. He's just a horse that's got everybody. He's on the top of everybody's mind when they're talking about yearlings, between Storm Boy, Learning to Fly, and everything else in between. People just seem really, really excited by him, and we've got a bunch of nice yearlings by him in the sale. So, you know, I think the market expectation around him relative to where it would have been, say, 12 months ago is really going to have skyrocketed. And if you justify yearling in the sale, you're feeling pretty confident about the sale on Sunday and Monday.
And just a reminder, and we've got a text through from Anthony, is Monday a night session or day session? So just give us the details, Sebastian, Sunday and Monday. And naturally, a lot of casual observers will be curious as to approximate time that the filly will go through out of Winx on Monday as well.
So Sunday and Monday, starting at 10 a.m. at the moment, that's the plan. It'll be, we've catalogued 250 lots each day. Both days are the same. I think the filly's due to go through just after lunch, sometime after 1 o'clock on Monday. Our expectation is it'll be busy here, but we have our sale day live broadcast on the English website for people to tune in if they can't be here in the flesh. And it's, you know, it's going to be most interesting. I mean, obviously, it's we're dealing with a catalogue of 500 yearlings, and a certain amount of the focus is on one particular yearling, but we're trying to deliver a good result across all catalogued yearlings, so it'll be a bit of a balancing act, but at the moment everybody seems happy with how things are going.
I'm sure you'll achieve that, and we appreciate your time as always, and enjoy what is one of the, well, it's great theatre for anyone casually going, but I know it's so important for your organisation, and we look forward to being there ourselves on Monday as well. Sebastian?
The most curious thing I've heard anybody ask is, what's anybody going to name it if they buy it? And that's, I don't know, heard all sorts of different names speculated, and it's not something I want to get into, but it is an interesting dinner conversation.
Yeah. Well, it is, and actually someone's just texted in. Hey guys, I have a suggestion for the Winx filly.
Oh goodness, here we go.
Grand Prix, which is grand prize, which he is.
It's probably a good start. You might need to meet the owners on Monday afternoon and advise.
Yeah, Vicky says, of course, Pre also contains two letters, each from her parents' names. Piero and Winx. I like it. Very clever.
Very clever, Vicky.
A lot of talking into this one early on a Thursday morning.
Thank you, Sebastian.
Pleasure, gents. Have a good rest of the week. Thanks for that.
Well, Aston Villa have equalised against Manchester City at the Etihad this morning. Good goal, too. Some good little interplay there. Duran scored the goal. Rodri had put City ahead after 11 minutes. So 1-1. They're at the Etihad this morning in the 25th minute. In the other matches, Arsenal have scored again, so they're 2-0 up. It was an own goal just before half-time. So Arsenal 2-0 against Luton, and that's 49 minutes gone in that match, and scoreless in the other match between Brentford and Brighton as well in the Premier League. Some midweek Premier League this morning, and there's a couple of crucial games tomorrow morning as well, with Liverpool involved. Yes, they're up against Sheffield United. That's 5:30 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time tomorrow morning. Liverpool $1.07, Sheffield United $20-1. The draw's $12 with Tab. And at 6:15 tomorrow, Chelsea up against Manchester United, with Chelsea $1.90 at Stamford Bridge. Gee, don't know if I'll be taking that about Chelsea at the moment. Manchester United, though, $3.40. The draw could be good value in this game at $4. For that game at Stamford Bridge tomorrow morning as well. Evan Priest not too far away to talk some golf. And, of course, we've got the Valero Texas Open. There's LIV Golf in Miami this weekend as well. The Masters next week. Bring it on. For the Masters next week at Augusta National, and the market as it stands for the biggest prize in golf. Gosh, Scottie Scheffler, $5. $5 to win the Masters next week. Hot favourite. Rory McIlroy, 12. John Rahm, 14. Brooks Koepka, Xander Schauffele, both at 19. Jordan Spieth, 20 to 1. Where's Cameron Smith? He's $26. Jason Day, 34. Minwoo Lee, 34. So we'll see if those prices change based on performances this weekend, heading towards Augusta next week. The Canberra Chicken, you probably like this one, Loz. They should call Winx's foal. Banks, as he'd need to own one to buy her, says the Canberra Chicken.
Don't mind that one either, Mitter. I read somewhere over 2.5 million.
2.6 is the record for a yearling.
It's a record, right. Mm. So we're assuming it will go for more.
Well, it's interesting because we see, as someone pointed out on the text line before, why is it our champion mares don't produce at stud? Black Caviar, Maccabi Diva, Sunline, Zenyatta, etc. Mm. It's just one of those strange anomalies. They don't. Often.
Owners of Winx might try and buy them.
Well, I don't. Well, they'll just put the reserve on and they'll just go, we don't get that, we'll keep her.
Mm.
The reserve. I'd probably be around 2.5. Yeah. I have no idea.
I'm looking forward to just seeing the atmosphere.
It'll be
and great. The buzz that's created. Mm. Because I reckon there'll be a few people. Because you can just turn up to on the day.
Mm.
Hopefully the weather's okay. But if people turn up and just witness, could be a bit of history.
Will be some history, no doubt about that. Still to come on the show this morning, we've got Blocker for the full hour coming up to preview round five already in the NRL.
So he's here early too. I've just heard him and seen him. He's got opportunities galore. He's got the muscles.
Well, you can sell your latest potential opportunity.
I will sell an opportunity to Blocker. Yeah. I won't leave you out. Yep. Mm.
Boxing promoter, potentially.
Yeah. You look like a boxing promoter, Bob. Doesn't he?
Yes.
He does.
Yes, he does.
And he could be the heavy as well. He could be the heavy that we walk in with. No one's going to muck around with us if we've got Blocky with us.
Absolutely not. Yeah. So Block's coming up. Jared Duffy from TAB will give us the latest markets. Josh Kennedy as well. Swans champion ahead of Gather Round starting tonight with that game between Adelaide and Melbourne. Such a crucial game. Biggest for the Adelaide Crows.
Biggest flops of the year so far, Adelaide Crows.
Yes, they have been. But the AFL table's interesting. There's four teams, I think, or five teams who are 0-3, yet to record a win. Yes, five clubs, the Brisbane Lions being one of them. Certainly, they've been the biggest flops loss.
Well, yeah.
Considering they're grand finalists.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. But
Adelaide had expectations.
Well, they lost, I think it was six games by seven or less points last year, and they were talking about how they're on the rise and how we should have made the finals. There was that game against the Swans.
Oh, yeah, where they would have made the finals had the goal been disallowed.
And all that, and we're building, we're heading in the right direction.
Been allowed, sorry.
And then all of a sudden, 0-3, they'd need to turn around. And if they beat Melbourne, they'll get some confidence out of that. But this is a game that they have to win.
Because
if they start 0-4...
Melbourne are good. This is tough.
Melbourne are a very good side.
They've
They're one of the teams...
Adelaide in Adelaide the other day.
Well, I've narrowed it down to four teams already.
Two Sydney clubs?
Yep. Melbourne. And who was the other team I was thinking of? Carlton.
I still think the Lions can come back.
I think they can make the finals. But, mate, you're just chasing your tail when you start the season 0-3, 0-4. Mm. You use so much energy, and by the time you get to the finals, because you can't afford to drop too many more games, you know, and then if you get injuries along the way, I don't know, it's just too hard, I reckon.
At the top of the table so far, the Giants, Fremantle are 3-0. How did that happen? Carlton are also 3-0. They play each other this weekend. By the way, this game tonight, the Demons as well, they have their star defender, Stephen May, back, and he broke a couple of ribs, and he had some spinal fracture as well. It's obviously not horrendously serious. A couple of weeks, less than 2 weeks ago, but he's returning tonight, Stephen May. Really good player at the back there for the Demons. The Crows, well, their coach, Matthew Nix, he's dropped three players to try and get a response from them for this game. And just some signing news. Well, while the Swans announced the extension of James Rowbottom yesterday, GWS, they've followed forward Jesse Hogan, who's been in the best form of his career in the last, what, 12, 15 months. He's staying on until 2026. He kicked 49 goals last year. He already has 12 from three games this year. The other interesting one this week in the AFL, Loz, is Collingwood and Hawthorn playing each other. And this is to all the commentary and story around Jack Ginnivan.
Oh, of how course, many free, well, firstly, free kicks he'll get.
Remember, Jack decided on grand final eve to go to Moonee Valley.
Yeah.
Went to the races on grand final eve, which some of you might have done in 1994. Mm. I don't know. Would you have gotten in trouble for going, I don't know, to Queanbeyan had it had a Friday and a Saturday night meeting under lights, which it wouldn't have had, in 1994? And or, well, I know you would have already been in Sydney.
No, I don't think Tim Sheens would have been too concerned. Yeah, okay. I mean, if you're out on the drink and going to nightclubs and things like that, yes. But just at the races, they're very hypocritical people, because there was a lot of Collingwood players that went to a function in the lead up to the Grand Prix.
Before they played.
And there was some commentary around that, but there wasn't as big a commentary surrounding Ginnivan before a grand final. And they started the season off poorly too, Collingwood. So it was not like they were flying still.
Well, Ginnivan's had a bit to say about his exit from Collingwood last year. And one of our listeners called up about him the other day in regards to the free kicks. I'll get to that. But on a podcast, he said how it was disappointing no coach or player at Collingwood reached out to say, I want you to stay and that we really value you. Mm. So he thought, well, you know, I better go here. So he's come out and, you know, voiced that publicly this week. And by the way, the AFL did reach out to Hawthorn and conceded he should have been paid at least a couple of free kicks in that loss to Geelong on Monday, which one of our listeners called in about the other day.
Yeah, there's always two sides to the story, though, when you're released from a footy club or not wanted at a footy club.
Mm.
You know, there's things that the player may not have done, but there's things that the player has done that's either affected the way he's prepared for a game or performances throughout the year, his training attitude, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And sometimes clubs don't like to come out and spill the beans. They just like to keep everything internally and hopefully that the split is amicable for both parties. But the player always tends to come out a little bit more disgruntled when they speak up. But I would think that Collingwood, if they wanted to have a response, would be fairly strong too on why they didn't re-sign him or want to keep him.
Well, they seem not to stand in his path for him to leave, that's for sure. G'day, Evan. How are you?
G'day, Mido. G'day, Loz. It's greetings from a freeway, actually, on the way to Las Vegas. Just landed in California and LA a couple of days ago. Had a couple of days in San Diego for some work stuff, and on the way to Vegas for an interview, and then getting ready for the big show for the Masters.
Anyone we should know about you're interviewing?
Golf coach, actually, Butch Harmon, who famously worked with Greg Norman and Tiger Woods and Adam Scott, and just writing a story on him. So got some stuff to do there, and then head from there to Augusta, to the hallowed turf of Augusta National for the Masters. Very, very excited, especially after hearing that intro song.
And we've got the lead-ups. Of course, there's the Texas Open, but there's Live in Miami this weekend. So what can we expect from this event? How many players from Live are heading to the Masters next week approximately as well, Evan?
Yeah, it's a good question, Mido. So 13 are heading to the Masters this year, which is actually down from last year, which was when they sent 18 Live golfers to the Masters. You'll see that number come down every year as all the exemptions those guys had into majors start to drop off and fall off. So out of those 13 guys, seven are past Masters champions, so they get into the Masters basically for life or until they're sort of in their 60s and not competitive. And then the other six guys, you know, it's kind of scary that Live Golf has only got six golfers who are currently eligible for the Masters, and those exemptions, as I said, will drop off in the next 3 to 4 years. Bryson DeChambeau, it'll start with Bryson DeChambeau, and it'll go from there. So the LIV Golf Miami event, they've actually switched up the order of it. It normally concludes the season for LIV Golf, and it's normally only a teams event, so you actually don't see any individual stroke play. And I think it'll sort of show, separate the boys from the men, and will give a really good test of who amongst those 13 is going to play well at Augusta. It's called the Doral course in Miami. It's a very tough course, water everywhere, really fast greens, and sort of it'll be a bit of a litmus test on who's driving the ball well, who's striking the ball well, and most importantly for Augusta, who's putting well. So one of those 13 is our own very own Cameron Smith, the 2022 Open champion. And he's had starting to come into some form, had a runner-up in Hong Kong, but you know, had a very slow start to the season. So it's going to be good to see how he goes at Doral. He typically plays pretty good at LIV Golf Miami, but that was before it was an individual event. So all Aussie eyes, I should say, will be on Cam to see how he goes, because he's the only Aussie LIV golfer going to the Masters.
What's your expectation of Tiger just to make the cut? And is that right that Rory McIlroy is not turning up until the Tuesday beforehand?
Yeah, credit to Rory McIlroy. You know, some people say that he's got ants in his pants, and others say that, you know, he's always willing to try new things. And, you know, famously, he only needs the Masters to complete the career Grand Slam, which would make him the sixth golfer in history to do so, first since Tiger Woods did it 24 years ago. And he gets very high stress when it leads into Augusta National. So he's not going to show up until the Tuesday night, which is very late. He's going to avoid the hoopla of the Masters and all the hype and the busyness of the practice rounds. And he sounds like he's just going to show up and go out on the course Wednesday, have a bit of a hit around, make sure he's learned the course and any changes. There aren't many changes this year, actually, for Augusta National. They've only moved one of the tee boxes back on one of the par fives, the second hole, about 10 yards. Other than that, it'll look exactly the same to Rory compared to last year. And Tiger actually jetted up there about 3 days ago. The internet sleuths were watching and tracking his private jet. He went up there and played golf with the chairman of Augusta National and his buddy, Justin Thomas. He actually hasn't officially confirmed that he's going to play the Masters, but whenever he takes a little trip up from Florida on his jet to Augusta National, that's usually a sure sign he's going to tee it up. And to answer your question, Loz, the expectation at this point is can he make the cut? You know, he did last year, and he is arguably more injury-free this year than he was last year, although he was playing a bit better on the course last year. If he makes the cut, it'll be nice. And if the weather cooperates, which it looks like it's going to, it might be a little chilly, which is not good for his ailing injuries. But if he makes the cut, it'll be a success for Tiger Woods.
And the Augusta Women's Amateur is on this weekend. What's this event? And are there any Aussies in the field, Evan?
Yeah, Mido, this is a really interesting event. It's into its fifth year now, 5 years old. And basically, it's an opportunity for women who were, you know, notably shut out from Augusta National up until about 12 years ago to be members. And now, you know, Augusta's sort of trying to grow the game. So they've got this event for women amateurs from all around the world, and they really try to get in the international field. A lot of Australians have been sort of received a special invitation, even though they haven't really qualified for it, just that there's always an Aussie in the field. And we've got an Aussie called Madison Hinson-Tolshard. She's from Perth. She's actually our top-ranked women Australian amateur golfer that we've got. She's 28th in the world, and she's actually playing at a really prestigious university in America. She plays at Oklahoma State, which has produced a lot of PGA Tour winners, and so she's being exposed to that elite competition in America. And so she should go pretty good. So, it's an odd event. It's only 54 holes. They play the first two rounds down the road in South Carolina at a place called Champions Retreat, and then they go and have a practice round. They stop the tournament, have a practice round on the Friday at Augusta National, and then Saturday is the third and final round, and that's where the winner is decided. And, going to be very interesting to see how it goes into its fifth year.
Who do you like in the Texas Open this weekend?
Yeah, so Texas Open, I really like Aaron Rye. He's an English golfer of Indian heritage, really solid player, comes out of the DP World Tour, won on that, and transitioned nice and smoothly to the PGA Tour, and he's just been up there on the leaderboard constantly this entire new year, all the way since January. And I really like him. He's a very, very good ball striker. This is a bit of a ball striker's course, and I think Scottie Scheffler is going to be suffering from some nerves from last week. So I really like Aaron Rye and Akshay Bhatia, another American guy. He's been playing really well. He was tied 11th, but he was in contention last week Really solid left-handed player. I like him for a top 10. And then for our top Aussie, you've got to go with Adam Scott. He's playing some pretty solid golf the last 7 or so months. So those are my three bets there. Keeping it light, because the punters, I don't know if they want to save their money for all the Masters bets and markets that TAB will have next week, but it's going to be really exciting.
Love it, mate. Thank you. Enjoy.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Evan Priest there, and straight into Adam Pengilly from the Sydney Morning Herald. How are you, Adam?
Morning, Meadow. Morning, Laws. How's the morning going today?
Very good.
Going well, but we're just sort of a little bit of doom and gloom around because we're thinking about this weather that may or may not come.
It's a worry, Laws. It's a worry. We haven't sort of had it yet, have we, which is a good sign. But I'll just keep looking at the forecast. Not so much for today. There's a fair bit of rain predicted for today, but more for tomorrow. This rain tomorrow is going to be very heavy. You don't want it 24 hours out from race day. And I'd be very surprised if we're not working on a very heavy track for Saturday at the moment.
Let's talk the footy tonight first. So Storm and Broncos. Are we absolutely convinced that Cameron Munster's playing tonight?
Yeah, good question, Mido, because this injury has been a real concern for the Storm. They haven't been able to quite work out exactly what's been holding him back for so long, sort of towards the back end of the preseason, the first sort of 4 weeks of the competition. There's been talks of obviously being a groin injury, but there's been some whispers it's a bit more serious with osteitis pubis that he's been struggling with. He hasn't done a whole lot of running, I don't think, but Craig Bellamy's obviously sent enough now to roll him out against Brisbane in round five. And I was having a chat to Joey during the week, and Loz, I think you might probably struggle with sort of groins, osteitis, pubis throughout your career. Joey was sort of saying that it really
different
messes
reasons.
Your head.
Yeah? Oh, that'll do me.
Sorry, I left the door open there, didn't I?
What are you laughing at?
Looks, mate, it's not your 30-year premiership reunion yet, all right?
Joey was saying, Mido, that he had a similar issue throughout his career and just it got into his head. He really struggled to accelerate through the line. He was just fearful every time he went for a period of about 18 months there that he was going to tear it again. So I'd imagine that Cameron's going to probably have a few little concerns in the back of his mind tonight. It'll be interesting to see when he takes off for that first time. But we know how crucial he is to the Storm. It's good to see him back on the park. Let's hope he's right to go and get through it and continue playing up to sort of the state of origin period for Queensland.
What about this West Tigers strategic plan? What can you tell us about it?
Well, the one thing I do know, Loz, is they didn't put a marker on how many premierships or top fours or top eights they want to achieve. How funny is it when you see teams do that in the past? I think the most famous one was, it's going back a fair while ago now, I think the Bulldogs came out with one and said, oh, we want to win 2 premierships in the next 5 years. Yeah. Well, guess what?
That's hard to do.
They didn't win a premiership in the next 5 years. So it sort of sets you up for failure a little bit. But the Tigers have been very, I suppose, very clever about how they've done this. And the main talking point out of this strategic plan is the effort they want to put into that Campbellton area to try and, I suppose, foster the juniors they've got down there. They're opening up a newish sort of office down there in Campbelltown as well. So it's been a good start to the year for them. This document's always been in the works for the last few months. Shane Richardson's been open in speaking about it for a while now. And let's hope they can achieve what their aims are. And I only saw next to their NRL team, no ceiling. That was the words they used, no ceiling, how high they can go.
Just awful news yesterday. Stefano Cerchi, young jockey, 23 years of age, died after that fall in Canberra a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, just terrible, Mido. We know he came out to ride on a short-term stint doing some work with Annabelle Neesham. I mean, we know he had that fall a couple of weeks ago in Canberra, and a lot of people having their thoughts and prayers, particularly a lot of the outpouring of emotion from over in Europe, where he was obviously very well known as a jockey. And just terrible, terrible news yesterday. So our hearts go out to his family and friends. Just shocking news. A young man, so only 23 years old, coming out to ride in Australia. And tragically, he's lost his life after a fall in Canberra. So, yeah, just goes to show again, boys, what a horribly dangerous game we're involved in.
Mate, you have a good day.
See you, boys.